Yeah, but I'm not. Hello? 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 Good morning, everyone. The Fish and Game Commission will start in about a minute. Not again, Steve. Well,
Nance.
Microphone check one, microphone check two.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the continuation of the October meeting of the California State Fish and Game Commission. I'm Richard Rogers, president of the commission, and I'm from Carpinteria, California. Our vice president of the commission had to leave, so Cindy Gustafson is not going to be with us today. Sitting right over on that side is Jim Kellogg from Concord. Sitting immediately to my left is Mike Sutton from Monterey, and on his left is Dan Richards from Upland. Immediately to my right is John Carlson, the executive director. Deputy executive director John Fisher is sitting over there, and we have Adriana Shea, who was here yesterday. Other deputy director is not with us today. Anita Biederman is here, and Sherry Fonbuena is here. I'm going to have to get used to that, Sherry Fonbuena. I'm going to have to say that. She's only had that name for 1 week. Deborah Barnes, our attorney. There she is, sitting over there, waving at us. We have Sonke Mastrup, Deputy Director of the Department, sitting over there. Chuck Armour is here. Where's Chuck? There's Chuck. Bay Delta Regions 3, and Marie Vojkovic, of course. I saw her a second ago. Yeah, there she is. Marine Region. So, with that, John, take it away. This is going to be a relatively short meeting this morning, guys, so bear with us. We'll be out of here soon. I'm sorry. And Chief Nancy Foley is in the back. Deputy Director and Chief of Enforcement is in the back, as well as Warden Peter Georges and Lieutenant Steve Risky. And yep. Okay, great. Thank you. Take it away.
Thank you. A few housekeeping issues. If you're interested in speaking on any of this morning's agenda items, please fill out a green card that's on the back of the desk there and turn that into staff on the side here. Keep in mind that everything is live video streamed today and put on archive tape. With that, we're going to start on item number 11, announcement of results. Deb, this would be you. Announcements of results from executive session, item 11. And our attorney is coming out of the audience.
Good morning, commissioners. I apologize. I was fostering positive relations with the department. I'd like to say that there's only one brief announceable moment from closed session yesterday, and that was an update on a security situation that has been before the commission for the last several meetings. Other than that, there are no announcements.
Thank you, Deb. John?
That moves us to, and I have no public speaker cards.
Go ahead.
So moving to item 12. Receipt of public testimony on proposal to amend section 27.20 et al. Title 14 CCR related to 2009 to 2010 recreational ground fishing. Please note the adoption hearing is scheduled for November 14th, 2008 in Huntington Beach. At this point, this is a receipt of public testimony. I don't believe the department has. Oh, Sankey has his hand up.
Yes, good morning, commissioners. Sankey Master of Fish and Game. Maria Vojkovic, the regional manager for Marine, I think would like to give you a brief synopsis of this package because this will have significant impacts and you'll be hearing about this issue for a year or two. We thought it'd be nice to give you a quick primer on it since we went to consent last meeting, so I don't think you've heard. So Maria would like to give you a very short summary of the issues you're facing with this package. Maria?
Good morning, commissioners. Maria Vojkovic with the Marine Region. I have a very short presentation that gives you the nuts and bolts of the recreational regulatory package that's for your consideration. Couple of background points. At the Pacific Fishery Management Council, this is a multiple meeting process for federal water regulation. We start with stock assessments of the ground fish species that we're able to accomplish. And in the past, I have told you that yellow-eye rockfish is our most constraining species for California, primarily in the north. That stock is at very low levels, and the amount that each state is allowed to interact with in their fishing for other species is extremely low. So when we project season structures or fishing regulations, we have to keep in mind those low levels of incidental take. So yellow-eye rockfish is our most constraining. In the past, canary rockfish has been extremely constraining. However, with the newest stock assessment, that stock is rebuilding ahead of schedule. And for the state of California, we have considerably more canaries, so that one is not constraining. For the first time, we have results from a stock assessment for blue rockfish. That assessment indicated that the stock is in a precautionary area, according to our nearshore FMP. And it will be a constraining species for us, primarily in the central and south central areas of the state, even though it's caught pretty much everywhere, the majority of the catch is in that area. So in the past few years, we've been taking more blue rockfish as a result of us making people fish in shallower waters to try and avoid some of the deeper water species like yellow-eyed canary. So you will see a result of the constraints of blue rockfish in the season structure. The other item that I want to draw your attention to is, if you remember, we now manage the state in regional areas. And we've had to do that because we're trying to afford people as much fishing opportunity as possible, and we have areas that result in higher catch of certain species. So in the north central area, we have divided that now into two areas, and we call them the north central north of Point Arena and north central south of Point Arena, so that we can open and close or have different regulations in those two areas differently. So now we come to the meat of the package, which is how much fishing does each regional area get in 2009 and 2010. And on the left-hand side are the regional areas, and then on the right is the entire year. We have indicated all of the closed periods by the word closed and gray shading. And on the top chart is what is currently today in place. And you'll notice that we have some September 2nd dates up at the top where we did that, the director did the emergency closure. So the bottom graphic is what we are proposing that you consider to adopt for next year and for 2010. And briefly, in the northern area, the northernmost area, the season begins 2 weeks later than it did this year, and therefore it lasts a couple of weeks later. And that was to preserve the primary fishing season for that north coast area. In the north central north of Point Arena, they begin 2 weeks sooner and end 2 weeks sooner, and that is focused primarily on reducing yellow-eye rockfish catch. In the north central south of Point Arena, the season begins 2 weeks later and ends 1 month sooner, and the depth restriction has been moved from 20 fathoms to 30 fathoms, and this is primarily for blue rockfish. In Monterey and the Morro Bay in the south central, they have 2 weeks less of fishing. That also is because of blue rockfish. And in the south, we have very few of those problems, and so the season remains the same as it is this year. The other changes that we're proposing is that the bronze spotted rockfish, which many of you have probably never seen, is proposed for no retention. The scientists do not have a stock assessment for that species, but they're very concerned about the decline in apparent abundance over the years. And we have increased the bag limit for cabezon and boccaccio to 2 fish per angler statewide. And there were some gear restrictions for sand dabs concerning the size of hook and how many hooks you could use fishing for sand dabs, and we've removed that for regulatory simplicity. And that is basically the plan.
Thanks, Maria. Any questions?
Just Dan? One. Why is the primary reason, if there is such a thing as a primary reason, for the healthy condition of the resource in the southern part of the state and the more challenged condition where we have to limit the seasons in the northern part?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Richards, it's kind of like a council thing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and address the question. It's primarily due to the distribution of the species. Many of those species are just not found in Southern California, and the numbers of fish that are found there, they're just not the bigger part of the bag limit for the South. So they don't... Blue rockfish are there occasionally. They're not a big component. Yellow eye rockfish are not a big component. Canaries are not a big component. So they're the... bag is made up of different species than it is up in the north. And there's other species that are available also in conjunction with ground fish, like the basses, so people fish both.
I thought it was people in Southern California had more to do and therefore didn't focus as much on maybe not.
Takes them longer to get it done.
Oh, I see. I shouldn't have done that with Kellogg sitting up here. That was really dumb on my part.
We do have a couple of public speaker cards on this issue, but before that, there was an oversight. Item 11, there was one public speaker card for that item. Paul Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland, oversight. Is that like an eyesore? Well, we want to talk about public trust, public confidence, and how that is being eliminated, especially through these executive sessions, the backroom chats, the choreographing of the events to take place. There's no transparency in this. It didn't used to happen. All the criticisms and bonuses that were given out were done in front of the public. Now, we want to talk about the elimination, the purging of the files. The institutional memory of the fish and game is being periodically and systematically eliminated. The eyesores, the blights on your image, the failures, all being eliminated from the institutional memory, the records. We believe it is a crime. We know how you commit fraud. You do it with estimates, percentages, graphs, charts, scales. This is how fraud is committed. These, presentations. We heard early on that the commission didn't want to entertain these PowerPoint presentations because the lights and the colors seemed to mesmerize everybody, to influence them. And that straight talk doesn't seem to be the order of the day. Now, in talking with Zonkey Mastriff, he says he knows he's going to hell. He doesn't care, and he's planning on it. How can you trust things like this going on? Huh? There's no reason for him to try and follow the rules. No, his expertise is to bend and break the rules, to camouflage the true status and conditions. These things have to be changed. You said in the last meeting you wanted to change the way you do business. We don't see it. That's all.
Thank you, Paul. Just so that everyone knows, that which is the agenda in executive session is legal and personnel items that obviously cannot be in front of the public. There are no objects or discussions of any kind that relate to the business of the commission, other than lawsuits and internal personnel, which I said, had you been listening. Anyway.
Sorry. That brings us to the public comment on item 12. After Maria's presentation, we have two speaker cards on item 12, John Gabers and Jim Martin. Please keep your comments to 3 minutes.
Good morning, President, Commissioners. My name is John Gabers. My wife and I own a business called Noyo Fishing Center. It's located at Noyo Harbor in Fort Bragg, California. The business has been there since the early 30s, and if you haven't been down to the harbor in the last few years, it's just a skeleton of what it has been in its glory days. But we're trying to hang on. We're trying real tough. My purpose for coming before you this morning is try to encourage you not to adopt the regulation as it's stated. My business in Fort Bragg, we've spent this last two years, trying to educate the folks that have come into our business as to the yellow eye, where they can fish, where they shouldn't fish. I've sold tenfold the descenders this year that we have in the past, if you're not familiar with those, for putting the fish back down, although I realize you don't count those in the calculation. We also charter 3-party boats out of Fort Bragg there, and we rent kayaks. The fiscal impact on the closure will be significant. On the emergency closure that we had last year, I did refund $50,000 in deposits for the next month that we had private charters. That was half of what we would have gained from that, and that's aside from the individuals going on the boats. The reason I don't want you to adopt it is we've cut the areas up into sections this year. I should say not we, but they have been cut up. We've been put into a section that goes from Point Arena up just past Shelter Cove. I've been trying to get the numbers of what our port has brought in Yellow Eyes in comparison to others. I haven't been able to find those stats except yesterday when I talked to Jim Martin. He said our port in Noyal Harbor was 10% of the total, but yet we're going to have a month less of the season than Eureka up north. I don't think it's fair. I was told that this has already been negotiated, but I'd never heard those negotiations taking place, or I certainly would have given my input. It's simply not fair to Noyal Harbor. We've done a good job, I think, of educating. Jim Martin has helped us with our local chapter there of North Coast Fishing Alliance. We've put on several barbecues to help educate people. I think we're doing a good job. I've been told it's a coincidence that we're down to 10% compared to up the coast 30 miles, where they're up around 40% is what I understand at Shelter Cove. I don't see why we're being put in that same category. It just simply isn't fair. And then if I can just quickly...
Yeah, do summarize. Thank you.
Thank you. On transparency, I heard that a lot yesterday. It would be very helpful to me as a business owner if a tabulation of yellow eye caught on a weekly basis was put on a website somewhere. I was caught with $5,000 of inventory that had just come in when the emergency closure was ordered last year. If I would have had a little bit of notice, it could have helped me a great deal. If we can get somehow some kind of a, I don't know, a thermometer or something and post it, it sure would help the retailers. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gabers. Maria, could you comment a little bit about the allocation? Mr. Gabers' point about Noyon, and help him with understanding the negotiations and what did that mean, and et cetera.
Yes, thank you. Because we have the council involved in one end of this and the commission, it is very challenging for people to engage in the information collection, you know, knowing what's going on and what information we're using, and they can't attend both meetings. So we rely on representatives of the fishing fleet, and they don't always represent individual harbors or groups of people. It just doesn't turn out that way. So if they don't come to the meeting themselves, their issues may not end up on the table if they haven't contacted us. So that's the public participation part of things. They need to be involved. They need to share their concerns and needs. The other thing is that, as I said, it's not just yellow eye. It's several other species, and balancing the past catches and projecting what might be caught in an area with a certain season structure, that takes place. The people who are at the council meeting and discuss with us the data and what they want, it's a give and take and a negotiation along the coast of how much fishing can we afford to give each area. The department doesn't say, here's your season structure. It's here's the kind of fishing that will be produced if you fish in June, July, August, September, October. Okay, so if you don't want to, and you can only take this much fish, so if you don't want fishing in June and July, then tell us what months you want so we can project what your catches might be so we can all stay under the harvest guideline. There aren't any hard allocations between areas. It's pretty much a negotiated and a negotiated process, and also relative to what the catches might be in those areas. So Mr. Garber's is in an area that has a lot of yellow eye. His boats may not particularly catch them. Our data may not be at a fine enough scale where we can separate out his particular area. And then we have to think about enforcement of having seasons open 50 feet away or 100 yards. Here's the line, and that season's open across the line. It's closed below this line. We start getting too many of those lines. People don't know where they are. They can't follow the rules. So there's a multiple levels of consideration. It's not just about allocation.
In your sense of it, Maria, did his area, was it represented? Because apparently his sense of it is that it wasn't. His comment about the north, what percentages that are caught here and there, sounds like their information didn't get into the mix. Who was supposed to? Well, Jim's raising his hand. So
Jim represents that area.
So it's Jim's fault.
No. I'm
okay.
Not
well,
going
that's,
to say
since
that.
Most things are Jim's fault, then that's okay. No, but I mean, it's important for him to feel represented and for him to feel heard. So we're going to have to make sure that happens.
Well,
so,
I'd like to see the graph brought back up again, the change, so we can look at that one more time.
Steve, can you?
Right there.
So their area is the north central, north of Point Arena, the second line down. And we're proposing May 15th to August 15th in 20 fathoms of water. And this past season, they had from June 1st until we closed the fishery September 2nd in 20 fathoms.
So it's kind of a shift.
It's a shift.
Well. And I guess the point was that it's shorter than the north.
Well, that's what he's saying. He's got less opportunity. I mean, and he's getting my attention at least because, I mean, they've been in business forever up there.
Yeah, he's got mine.
And here we are. We're in a situation where Maria did a great job and the Pacific Fisheries Council and all the people involved. But we're actually causing hurt to somebody that we may not have to do that to, and if we can prevent that, then we need to take a look at it.
Yeah, I agree. Defend yourself, Mr. Martin. Step to the microphone. You have a card here.
Jim Martin, Recreational Fishing Alliance, and I'm a ground fish advisor to the Pacific Fishery Management Council. And I want to respectfully disagree with some of the things that Ms. Vojkovic said. I think that there is an allocation process that goes on internally within the department about how to balance, like she said, about things like, well, who's going to get the blue rockfish if we have a problem with that? How do these constraints on yellow eye for our region lend some blue rockfish to the region south of us? And what it really comes down to is that Fort Bragg has been lumped in with Shelter Cove, where there's a huge take of yellow eye, because that's where the yellow eye are. They're a healthy population there, I would say. And one of the reasons Southern California doesn't have a problem with them is because they're all gone, they got fished out, whatever. And, you know, we run into them occasionally inside of 20 fathoms. They're not really predominant there. Yellow eye rockfish are about 250 feet of water out and maybe just a lot deeper water on the continental shelf. One of my frustrations is that in our region, 20 fathoms is, you know, so close to shore you can almost throw a rock there into it. Mm-hmm. And we have no ground fish opportunities in federal waters. And I've expressed my personal frustration with Maria's. Why am I coming to council meetings when we have no fishing opportunities here? And it's all about a state issue. And what I have been contemplating is asking you to defend us to some extent against the federal regulations. We've heard talk about conservation areas, and we're not opposed to those if they'll work. But when they came in with the Yellow Eye conservation area proposal, I was convinced that that would just be an extra regulation, and we'd still get shut down early. Because what you got to remember, 2.1 metric tons of Yellow Eye statewide is nothing. It's, I had a word I was going to use, but save it for the council and the GAP meeting. So we really don't have a fishery, and it's not our, the recreational sector didn't fish those out. They were trawled in the 1980s, and they're probably depleted. But then again, you look at the stock assessment on Yellow Eye, and it admits that it's data poor. And we're not getting any field work anymore. There's no research money. And when we try to make efforts to provide funding, that steps on some toes in the department and the council. You know, that's our job. And why don't you go to Congress and get the funding for this kind of stuff? And, you know, we're just between a rock and a hard place. And I'm a very frustrated place right now on a lot of different fronts, and this is just one of them. So I appreciate the fact that, yeah, we can negotiate some things about how we get a season in Fort Bragg. But what you see there is the most days on the water that we could possibly get out of this situation without blowing out the OI and shutting down the entire West Coast ground fisheries. So the unfortunate thing is that the trawl fleet has gone offshore, and they can't be held responsible because they don't really catch any Yellow Eye after all those years of catching them. So, you know, I'm used to this, taking a lot of heat at the council meeting, and I'm prepared to answer any questions you may have. This is the reason we put in for the EFP in deep water, because we're looking for opportunity. Even in a desperate way, we're fishing in 1,000 feet of water because we know that there's no canary out there in Yellow Eye. We just need to get a line wet, but it's pretty impractical, I mean, a lot of ways. I mean, I don't know how many people are going to want to do this, but they're kind of excited. There's a little novelty right now. It's giving a little bit of business to the charter fleet, but, you know, at some step along the way. Now, here's my idea. You know, we've got this huge conservation area, rockfish conservation area, that starts at 20 fathoms and extends all the way out to 200 miles offshore. Why don't we look at places to open up where it's soft bottom, we can fish for some flatfish, some federally managed flatfish, within that rockfish conservation area, get some data about where we can fish in that deeper zone without impacting the overfished species. Another suggestion I'd like to make, canary rockfish. You saw that that's no longer a constraining species, and I think it'd be really important to include one fish bag. There's so many canaries out there. And what's happening is the management has broken down. We're overfishing on the nearshore stocks like blue rockfish because this, like Maria said, we're hammering the nearshore. Well, another way we're doing it is we have to throw back these canaries, and so then you go catch another fish, which is probably a blue or black rockfish. And so if we could keep one of those as part of the bag limit, I think that would overall reduce the stress on the situation. So those kinds of creative ideas is what we need. But I'm really frustrated at the lack of fishing opportunity we have in federal waters.
And Maria, do you have any comments that you'd want to make on these remarks or not? No? Yeah?
Well, I certainly am not going to get into a he said, no. She said.
Don't mean that.
It is extremely challenging to try and provide fishing opportunities for the coast above Point Conception.
Right.
That's the reality when we talk groundfish. As we get further north, because of the Yellow Eye situation and the very small amount of Yellow Eye that we even have on the coast to account for, it becomes next to impossible. And so we've heard comments from people like Jim, people like Jimmy Smith out of Del Norte County. They want as much fishing opportunity as possible, and we've tried to give them that within the constraints of not exceeding our overfished species.
How about the idea that Jim put forward about sandy bottoms? I mean, what is there anything in that?
One of the challenges we've had.
Because he's right about getting a line wet. I mean, you know, in flatfish and whatnot, those are fun. Maybe not at 1,000 feet.
There's lots of great ideas It adds to the complexity of the regulations. One of the things that we have been trying to achieve is simplifying the regulations because people have told us they don't understand them. And when we start making these more complex things, then we get that even more. So I'm sure you can get a comment from enforcement about the complexity of the regulations the way they currently sit. And with these other ideas, that just adds to it.
Yeah, no, I really hear what you're saying. To me, however, complexity may come back into it if you're right on the edge of making a fishing business go out of business because there is no opportunity, and that business is substantive, for the local area for fishing opportunity. Obviously, the complexity is something we're trying to avoid all the way across the board, both terrestrially and marine. But I don't know. I mean, I'd like to visit that, take a look at that in some way. I don't know, Jim, how you feel about it. But it seems to me that there must be some way, not necessarily at this moment, but going forward, because if there are some things that are not onerous from an enforcement perspective, and something that we could get through with the feds and maybe negotiate out something. Sankey has your hand up. You have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, commissioners. I just would like to point out a few things. One is I appreciate this discussion because it is a very important issue and it impacts people in a very real way. But as Jim pointed out and Maria pointed out, this has been a very lengthy negotiation process to get to this point. And this is a zero-sum game, so to speak. And yeah. It's actually not directly relatable because these areas each have different potential impacts when you put a line in the water relative to these constraining species. So what I'm trying to point out is while you certainly are welcome to figure out how to resolve this issue, it's like a balloon, though. If you let one area expand, you're going to have to contract another area. So if you give to some area, you have to take away from another, and it may not be one for one. I just want to be aware that this is a zero-sum game, so to speak, and this is incredibly complex set to maximize fishing opportunity. That's been our goal per your direction over the years, is do whatever is reasonable to get as many people on the water as possible. We have stretched this to the point where, as you know, this year the director had to close one of our fancy deals a little early because we were catching more than we were supposed to. And the director has made a very clear commitment to the council for a lot of different reasons. We will not exceed our harvest guidelines because it threatens to jeopardize the entire fisheries, not only in California, but in Oregon and Washington. So that's the environment we're having to operate under. So I just wanted to let you know, there's no free lunches here.
Jim, you've
got... And that's kind of the same comment I was going to make. If we make a change for one person that went to all the trouble to come down here, then we open the Pandora's box. And I just want to say that Maria, I think, and I think the rest of the commission does as well, that you're doing an excellent job. You're carrying out the mission that we desire, just like Sankey said, and giving as much the best fishing opportunities as you possibly can during in the situation you're in. So that being said, I would just put a plea out to everybody watching this on the internet to give him some business up at his place this year and help him out, and hopefully next year it'll be better, because we have to live with the closing when we meet the quotas and stuff like that. That's what these marine preserves are all about, is depleting of the fish, and it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with your remarks, Jim, entirely. One of the things that was said, however, and Sankey, if you can maybe say something on this, would be the opening up of areas that may be not within our jurisdiction, maybe they're feds, where these fish do not reside, which would be sand, so that you have an opportunity to catch flash fish or other species that are not the targets of these restrictive regulations. I'm wondering I realize that negotiating with these folks is not the easiest thing in the world, to say the least. But Sankey, do you have any? I'm not talking about for this year. I'm talking about if maybe we can. Is there any way for us to get more in a negotiation with the feds that should be light touch with respect to the issues at hand?
Yes. The department is absolutely committed, and you have Maria and Marcia Remco, who's now your Groundfish staff rep on the council, and lots of staff who are absolutely committed to eking out every little fishery we can out of the system. But we are, again, as you know, only one of many players on the council.
Sure.
And you have our commitment. We're looking for anything that we can to let people go have fun on the water where it's feasible. And Maria pointed out something very interesting, and I know a couple of the wardens here can speak to it personally. We at the same time have to avoid putting our recreational anglers, who are not professionals, into situations where they're violating the law inadvertently.
That's right.
A very unpleasant scene. No one likes writing a little kid a ticket for having the wrong color fish on their line.
Yeah.
And so that it's a balancing act of, you know, Jim's a professional recreational angler. I mean, that's his life. He understands the rules. He makes it a point. But we must
not
never
anymore.
Forget. Yeah, that's right. We destroyed that. But we must never forget the majority of our recreational anglers are exactly that. It's recreation. And if there's one quick way to kill that, it's to make them uncomfortable that they can understand how to be legal. All right. The good news is most of our anglers want to be legal. They want to follow the laws. And if we make it very hard, they go play golf. And so that's kind of the balancing act on the complexity. We are getting complaints now about that complexity. We are willing to push it some more, but recognize it does come at a cost. And So we're looking for guidance. Jim's very good at letting us know what he thinks. He's very vocal about that. So if you have guidance or thoughts on how to balance that, we're all ears.
You had your finger in the air, Jim. You want to make another vocal?
Yeah, I had a positive contribution to make here, I think. You know, one of the things that John mentioned is how we've been trying to use these descender devices to send the rockfish down that are overfished, and hopefully they'll survive. One of the things we asked for was that on the SURFS sampler forms, when they interview the anglers, ask the anglers, did you use one of these when you were fishing? And we don't quite know what the effectiveness of these barotrauma devices are, but if you get a sense of what proportion of the anglers are using that, making the effort to do that, that could help us down the line.
Could you describe a descender? I've never seen one.
It's basically an upside-down barbless hook. That's one type of thing that Bill Shelton makes. You put a weight on it, and basically you hook it on the jaw and send it back down and give it a jerk, and it's gone. And usually they stay down there and swim away. Some species do better with it than others, and you know, we need data on that. There's a bunch of studies being done. But
I know puncturing the swim bladder is considered not a good idea because you're going to end up killing the fish.
Well, it can work, but it's not the best way.
Yeah.
The main thing is to get them down to depth. And so those are the kind of things that could add to fishing opportunity. But also getting back to the stock assessment, which, you know, basically you get in a situation, we don't have enough data, so we got to be precautionary in your fishing opportunity.
Are descenders readily available in the market?
John's selling them.
They are? In Southern California as well? Because I can't tell you how many birds I've fed, you know, because of that, because of the lack of having that.
Like
I've got to look into
fish.
That myself, because I fish often, and I've got to look into that myself.
And I don't mean to, I'm not criticizing the department. We actually, you know, we work really hard together. It's not, you know, I'm not pointing the finger here. I think, and even this question of what's on the SURF sampler form may be an issue with Pacific States that runs those sampling programs, and they need to get that on the form now. They need to be asking, are you using them? And maybe even say, well, maybe you should.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Any further comments?
Just to echo what Sankey said about enforcement. You know, Jim represents the Recreational Fishing Alliance, but the majority of recreational fishermen are people like you and me, and there's probably nobody sitting at this table would know what a yellow eye was if we did catch it. And that's the problem with the average recreational fisherman. They don't have a clue. Mm-hmm. Had I not had the opportunity to fish in a different country where they raped the yellow eye fishery instead of trying to protect it, I wouldn't know what one looks like. Unfortunately, I do now. But that's the problem with enforcement. The average fisherman doesn't know if they're catching one or not.
Yeah, even with the charts. And there's some wonderful color charts that you keep aboard, but they're kind of, boy, you look at them, they're really hard to tell. Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, thank you. Any further comments or questions?
I was just going to say, the department is looking for creative ways, and, for example, one of the areas that I've been very fond of is this notion of five rockfish and you get off the water. I don't care what color, whatever. To simplify it so the average person can feel comfortable but yet avoid take. And those are some of the ideas that, you know, we are exploring and trying to figure out alternatives that are more conducive to the average, using Sarah Palin's terminology, Joe Sixpack. So, you know, they can have a good time without fear of getting into trouble while actually rebuilding these stocks. And I also want to add real quickly, you know, the Magnuson Act was recently reauthorized, and it significantly shifted its emphasis on a precautionary approach. In other words, you will be precautionary unless you have data to suggest otherwise. And that has really fundamentally altered the game, if you will. And so we have to be very careful here. And as resource managers, and you being the state's ultimate caretakers, it's your obligation to make sure we're not harming these resources and rebuilding them and providing as much opportunity as we can doing that. And it's not easy, and we're looking for input. And if somebody feels like they haven't been represented, we're in the book, we're on the website, talk to us. I mean, we're all ears. We're looking for ideas.
Yeah, thank you, Sankey, because I think the commission very definitely does want to increase fishing opportunity, the extent to which is feasible from all the perspectives that I think have been pointed out by everyone. Thank you very much. Go ahead, John. We need to go.
Thank you. That ends public testimony on item 12. Please note that the adoption hearing is scheduled for November 14th in Huntington Beach. Item 13, receipt of public testimony on proposed amendments to aquaculture regulations. 13A, proposal to repeal Section 241 and amend Section 245, Title 14, CCR, related to aquaculture disease control regulations. Note that the adoption hearing is scheduled for November 14th, 2008, in Huntington Beach. 13B, proposal to amend Section 243, Title 14, CCR, related to the take of wild broodstock for aquaculture purposes. Note that the adoption hearing for that is also scheduled for November 14th, 2008, in Huntington Beach. My understanding is Scott Barrow from the Department of Fish and Game is going to give us an update on this.
Good morning, Commissioner. Scott Barrow, Fisheries Branch. These are primarily two aquaculture-related eyesores. I got a couple slides on the disease and three slides on the broodstock. So basically, thank you very much. Okay, the aquatic disease control consists of two sections we're trying to deal with. The first one is the repealing of Section 241, importation of salmonids from Idaho. Basically, this was enacted in 1984 in response to a disease outbreak in Idaho. At that time, they weren't really sure of the pathways that were involved, and we feel it's outdated today due to the present disease controls in Section 245, which we're going to be amending in the next slide. And also, we also require importation requirement of health certification of salmonid eggs under the importation regulations for various diseases that affect salmonids. So the bulk of this eyesore is basically dealing with Section 245, aquaculture disease control. These regulations have been updated in over 20 years. The reason why we're able to do it now is we have expanded fish health staff due to the Hatchery Inland Fisheries Fund. Basically, the structure is updating disease listings, revising categories to reflect and advances in present fish pathology as determined now by our staff. This is the first phase of two phases. We're dealing with kind of arranging the categories a little bit and adding some of the more easier diseases, and then we're going to come back to you in sometime in late 2009 to the second with a larger, some of the more harder diseases to classify and clarify. In the ISOR, I should make a correction. In the ISOR, originally stated that it had support of the Aquaculture Disease Committee. Since the meeting last week of the Aquaculture Development Committee and also another meeting of the California Aquaculture Association, we find their initial, we thought we had support. Now there are questions being raised by both organizations. The department has been in conversation with them for the last week since these issues have been raised, and we're going to continue meeting with them and coming back to you at the next meeting with some of the concerns they're raised. So far what I've seen, most of the concerns dealing with the ISORs themselves are primarily understanding and non-substantive, but the communication issues are things that we're going to be working on trying to improve this with and help with Devin Bartley, the new aquaculture coordinator.
Thank you.
And that Mark Drawbridge from the association has a letter that's en route to you folks outlining some of the issues that they're going to be raising. The next I'll be discussing the take of wild broodstock. Basically, this is a joint between enforcement, ourselves, and the fish path people. Basically, we're adding some new enforcement measures, asking to require all collectors hold a commercial fishing license. Our permit holder is a registered aquaculturist, so therefore they do not need to have this requirement. But we're also asking that there's a separation between what's a collector and what's an assistant, so that we don't have multiple collectors going out all at the same time. Supposedly this came up in development of sturgeon, all out supposedly targeting sturgeon when we're not really sure what they're targeting or what they're doing out there. We're also going to be looking at having them carry sufficient ID and also clarifying some of the assistant duties. We're also going to eliminate recreational take activities while they're operating under a collection permit so that we don't come on board and find undersized sturgeon or legally recreational-sized sturgeon on the deck, and they say, oh, we caught that for ourselves. We feel they should be out there collecting sturgeon or the broodstock for the broodstock, not out there also enjoying both avenues. We're also asking for pre-notification of several offices so that the word can get out to both enforcement and the branch. And then some of them are required to have logbooks, so if they have logbooks, we want to have them in possession. And basically, enforcement also would like to be able to inspect in all places vehicles, vessels, where broodstock may be held. And they were also interested in dropping the during office hours or prior notification if they want to come on board and inspect it for enforcement considerations. The next portion of this is looking at fish health measures. Presently, the section allows the release of hatchery-reared progeny from wild stock back into the wild for a fee reduction. Primarily, we would like to remove that because presently we're not allowing any release of sturgeon back into the environment due to concerns of the white sturgeon enterovirus. And there's also in the marine there's also red, pink, green abalone that are raised collected under wild broodstock. There's been some attempt at trying to get cabazon and California halibut. We're also asking that we may ask them to require to hold the wild broodstock separate from the existing stock to ensure that we have disease isolation capacities, and also determine if this second requirement is necessary. We're asking for an initial site visit to determine that by fish health labs. So in the ISOR, we talk about, as part of the inspection fee, we talk about, we've ranged a cost of this inspection from $100 to $500 so we can have a discussion with your folk, with you and the public, about what an actual inspection costs the department. Presently, under existing section 671, the fee for 2009 is $169. That covers up to 2 hours with $42 each additional hour with no no recovery from the department for travel costs. In talking to enforcement, the average enforcement inspection runs from 2 to 4 hours. Rough average is about $60 an hour. It runs from 120 to 240 if they're going to inspect a facility. These are department costs. These aren't what we charge the people. And that doesn't exclude travel costs. For a fish health inspection of less than 100 miles, again, of 2 to 4 hours, including travel costs, it runs from anywhere from $300 to $350 an hour. And if we have to travel over 300 miles for fish health inspection, including overnight stay and possibly air cost, anywhere from $1,000 to $1,200. So basically, under 671, we have about 13 visits a year that happens under that section. And for marine freshwater broodstock permits, we basically have about 1 to 4 asked for a year from about 7 facilities. So it's not a lot of inspections and not a lot of facilities, but yet, nevertheless, it's something that we would like to have a discussion for determining adequate fees. And basically, the Abalone Project presently, as part of their process, visits all their facilities each year, and it takes them about 2 people for 1 hour. But they're doing it as part of a systemic, just looking at the facility for stability issues and other issues. And so that isn't reflected on these costs, but I just want to share that information with you. And that's all I have to share at this point in time. If you have any questions, I'd be happy
any
to
questions?
Answer.
I think we do have some public commentary.
Okay, the only question I have is, because we are allowed to recover what our costs are, it occurs to me that those numbers up there are grossly underestimated. I'm not sure how we can do anything for $42 an hour. I mean, I think that's crazy, and I think we need to relook at this. You know, we are constantly under huge financial pressures here, and when I look at something like that, I think, there are boatloads of items that I guarantee are not being included in those costs. And I would encourage a more realistic look at that, because we're simply not, it's unrealistic. There's no possible way when you start talking about what the true costs are, you know, mileage, gasoline, administration assistant, follow-up, clerical. And there's this is a way more than just someone's hourly cost, which, by the way, I'm assuming those are That is primarily what that is.
That works out to be about $84.50 an hour. And the enforcement is $60 an hour, and the fish health is anywhere from $70 to $100 an hour.
What's that? What
the
numbers
cost
are those?
Per hour. If you take those numbers and just,
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, the real cost is way higher than that. And
I
think we need to take a good look at that and say, well, are we being realistic with this? I mean, it's not a huge amount of money, but because we're only doing so few of them. But at the end of the day, if we're supposed to recover what our costs are, let's truly recover what our real costs are.
I tend to agree with Commissioner Richards on this, but I understand that we received a letter from the Aquaculture Association yesterday.
Yes.
We haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it came in late last night. I just want to let the commissioners know it'll be in the record. You'll have it sent to you next week. But, we're still at the discussion stage, so it will be considered.
Right. It's primarily dealing with communication that they felt they should be included as part of the discussion prior to going to public notice. All the registered aquaculturists in California got this notice on 9th when we sent it out to public notice. And it came up in the meeting. Devin's aware of it. We want to talk with them to figure out where we're at with this. We realize there was a communication breakdown. We think we have measures to deal with it.
Well, there certainly is a communications breakdown if the commission does not receive a letter until the night before. I mean, that is from the regulated public. I mean, that's almost laughable.
Mm-hmm. Who is the group that, who did you give notice to?
We gave notice to the Aquaculture Development Committee and the registered aquaculturists that are listed in California.
And so Okay. Knowing our procedures, they still send a letter to us at the 11th hour?
That's correct. They want us to hold this over till following meetings. Our view from talking to Neil is we want to talk to them to find out what their concerns are with the process. What concerns, can we separate the process from the concerns with the ISOR? because we feel that the enforcement measures in the wild broodstock are very important and need to be in place now, because we don't have any requests for wild broodstock for sturgeon yet.
Well, I think,
but this is the time of year they come in.
No, I agree. We need to deal with this immediately. Sonke, could I ask you to get me copies of who we sent those notices to?
Absolutely.
I'm curious on what aquaculture lease data we have there, so I'd really like to see.
Yeah, we can get you. Well, when it was noticed, there was a list of interested parties.
The commission already
has two
that.
Different groups, actually, he's discussed. One is
actually, our staff has that.
And if you could add
whoever.
Any additional names you want to put, just let me know. I'd be happy
I just want the mailing list. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, we will. And I do want to point out that Devin is working very hard in the department. We are really trying to reinvigorate a good dialogue and discussion. However, from a departmental point of view, these issues are so significant to us. Until I see a significant issue brought forward by them, I do not recommend waiting on this. These disease issues are some of our most threatening issues to the state's resources. And I'm
in other words, on the monetary issue.
Well, the monetary
that's
issue.
That's something that we could handle and not lose time.
Yeah. The monetary issue is right now the state subsidizes the industry by not cost recovery. To me, that's secondary to making sure we don't accidentally introduce a devastating disease for a natural resource. So, we want to keep moving forward. If we find out there's some significant issue here, we'll bring that to your attention. But otherwise, I recommend we continue moving forward,
okay. And
we'll continue working with the industry to make sure we know better communicate, of course.
The three members I've talked to all mentioned they didn't have a problem with the eyesores as stated, as developed. There's how we're going to implement some of the new measures or some of the major sticking points. So I think we're close. That's why we want to talk to them.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any further questions? Because I think we do have some public commentary.
Martin Strain, Paul Weakland.
That person's not here then?
Martin Strain is not here. Point Reyes Oyster. Okay. Paul Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Concealed inside of this lengthy document about changing the disease control terms and definitions is a reference to the Sebelid worm, an introduction from South Africa. You want to change the name and the reference now. Let's back up. They say that no major changes have been done for over 20 years. That is not true. Major changes were done. We were told they were major changes in 1996. And one of the handouts that I provided for you on the record yesterday, you can pick it up, to all registered aquaculturists, recent information developed by researchers on the Sebelid polychaete worm infestation in California, started through aquaculture, introduced from South Africa. Mentioned in the announcement of fish parasites and human health, mentioned also in the identification and management of exotic Sebelid pest, California cultured abalone. Also mentioned in this book here, the identification and management of the exotic Sebelid pest, cultured abalone of California. This document is an error. This document was produced to insulate Ben Beatty and the aquaculturists from lawsuits at the time. The Fish and Game and the Aqua begged the commercial fisheries and the abalone fishermen not to sue. Don't sue. No, we didn't want to sue you because we wanted to work with you. But that's not working, is it? Our promises that we were given have never been put forth. If you'd notice in this lengthy book, bad expense that they put to put it up to avoid the lawsuit, is that nowhere in here is the Latin name used because they thought that it proficient to use the common name so everybody'd know what they're talking about. But now you want to further camouflage the situation and the status of this Sebelid worm. That, if you notice, documentation shows that it has been identified in the wild around abalone aquaculture facilities, not only in San Diego, Carlsbad, Cayucas, Santa Cruz, Half Moon Bay, outplantings in Northern California, Bodega Bay, Fort Bragg, and Crescent City. Documents all attain to this. The recommendations have not been followed. The thing that we're upset about is you want to change the whole thing. You want to camouflage the fact that the cebellid worm is in California. You have gone out on lengthy studies and surveys of abalone, but you've purposely not allowed the inspection of these abalones for cebellid worm so that they are not being identified. This is deceitful. It's a crime. It's fraud. We now want to submit that if you notice in all of these documentations and the lengthy publications from the department, that the South African cebellid worm should stay in the regulation so everybody knows what you're talking about instead of camouflaging this. Also, we want to talk about broodstock. I submitted a letter that was submitted years before, the broodstock. Well, we know that you want to take natural occurring things, but you're creating a hybrid. They are artificially spawned. These are hybrids that you are putting back into the system. Even though these prodigy, the broodstock have come from the area, you're creating a hybrid. These hybrids are fouling the genetic reservoir, contaminating the gene pool, and you are destining our aquatic species to extinction because of this. And your purpose, neglect, your disregard to try and help along your, would you all have money and stock in aquaculture facilities? Well, that'd be a conflict of interest, the way you're mandating the promotion of this highly problematic industry. All right, you want
Thank
me
you,
to
Bob.
Go.
That concludes public comment on number 13. So I want to make it clear we're still on schedule then for possible adoption at November 14th, Huntington Beach on 13 A and B.
That's right.
Item 14, discussion of request of a statutory and or regulation change to the commercial rock crab permit provisions, section 125, title 14, CCR, permission to tend traps in case of illness. This stems from a letter that the commission received requesting this. My understanding is Sankey Mastrup has some comments. Item 14.
Yeah, good morning again, Commissioner Sankey Mastrup, Fish and Game. What I have to share with you on item 14 is technically on rock crab, the commission does in fact appear to have authority to make a provision here. However, we have previously discussed that this is an issue we're facing across all commercial fisheries, and the department feels at this point it, we were hoping that under the MRC or something we could talk about really getting at what provisions do we want to provide commercial fishermen and then find a way to apply those provisions across the board rather than kind of a piecemeal by piecemeal approach, because we do believe this is a problem and it needs to be dealt with, but we would like to provide for, if the commission chooses to provide this kind of provision, that we do it once for everyone and make that a standard provision. At least that's our viewpoint. And so it's your pleasure, but I just wanted to share our view on an approach here.
Commissioner Sutton, you want to comment?
No, I think this makes a lot of sense. And in fact, many of our stakeholders have called for this kind of thing. So terrific.
Thank you, Sankey.
So with just as to bring some closure to that, if the commission is interested in pursuing a across the board solution, what we would then do is try and draft some regulatory thoughts on how you might go about doing that, and that probably will end up in a need to end up in a stat in a bill or
yeah,
a
the MRC is very interested.
Okay,
in that.
We will plan on then being prepared for that. Does the commission interested in at that for their December 10th meeting, is it?
Thank you, Sankey.
Yes.
So he's asking.
Oh, well, yes. Sankey, I think that would be great. The December 10th meeting of the MRC is still tentative. We're still trying to find an appropriate space in Sacramento. But because it's a day before the commission meeting, we thought it might be convenient for the public and for members of the committee to be there. So let's shoot for that.
Okay, and I'll work with your staff. If your staff are having a problem finding a location, the department's very willing to help.
Thank you, Sankey.
Find some
Appreciate
way to accommodate.
That.
15. That, Commissioners, that brings us to consent calendar. I have a suggested motion from staff.
Please read it.
The Fish and Game Commission hereby approves this October 3rd, 2008 consent calendar, items 15 through 17.
So Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous.
And that moves us to item
18, future meetings.
Yes, item 18, future meetings. Our next meeting is on November 13th and 14th in Huntington Beach, California, December 11th, 12th, Sacramento. And that'll conclude the 2008 meetings. Then we'll start up in February in Sacramento in 2009.
Okay, and that concludes the Fish and Game Commission, isn't it? Do I, any new business or any final commentary anybody wants to make? Otherwise, I would move adjourn. Did I hear a sec?
I do have one more award I want to.
Oh, my God. No. Here we go.
I'm just kidding.
Okay. Second. Do I hear a second? All those in favor say aye. Aye. The October commission meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.